Hello, hello, greetings once again. This is your man Jeremy Darden reporting live from the Unicorn's Couch. I am honored as always to be joined by my brethren. Please introduce yourselves. Say hello to the world for us, please.
Okay, age before beauty.
Uh-huh.
I appreciate that. I'd be the young buck of the crew. No, I'm just kidding. This is Rob. Rob Bacon. I'm back again. I appreciate you guys coming back and listening to us. Blessings to you. Blessings.
And once again, we thank you for taking this journey with us. I'm Orrin Howard, and I'll turn it back over to our host today, Jeremy.
Yeah, thank you, brother. So this is episode 6 of our inaugural season. And as always, we are thankful that you all are strapped in and walking with us for a little bit in our talk tonight. But before we get going for tonight's topic, just want to give some shout outs. Fellas, do you guys have anybody that you wanted to shout out, give thanks for?
Yeah, I give thanks for all 200 and something, I can't remember off the top of my head, downloads representing from everywhere from France and the United States and Barbados. Also, we wanted to shout out New York for representing with some multiple downloads. And we want to shout out Hawaii, who's a new partner with us. So, you know, the more you come, the more we'll do. So appreciate that.
I definitely want to shout out my family. I want to shout out you two guys, but definitely all the 2020 graduates on every level of education, yeah, as well as any church functions or people just, you know, understand that this is something that's different, but it will empower you moving forward. So I want to shout all of them out.
Yeah. And Shout out to my wife, Cortina, who's tuning in, listening, and my brother D out in Texas, and my brother Scotty up in Frederick. So with all of that, hopefully we'll be keeping you guys tuned in for some time to come. So once again, please, we welcome your feedback, your input, your insight as listeners. Feel free to email us with any comments, questions. Hold us accountable, right? Email us, send your thoughts in to unicornscouch@gmail.com. And once again, we are streaming on platforms that include Apple Podcasts, Simplecast, Spotify, iTunes, Deezer, Android Download Manager, CastBox, Dog Catcher, Pockets, Cast, and it seems to be growing each week, so we're always thankful for that. So tonight, what we're going to be focusing in on is this concept called me against the world, this mentality, this it's a lot of things. And so I welcome Rob and Orrin, your input and your perspective on this. I'd like to start off tonight by maybe kind of setting the table a little bit with I think it's a well-traveled quote nowadays, but it just lets us know that the child who is not embraced by the village will burn it down to feel its warmth. Mm. Right. Popularized by the recent movie Black Panther. I think Killmonger had, shared some of that, but it really speaks to, I think, the spirit, the energy, the emotion of what it feels like to be forgotten, looked behind, overwhelmed, and just not welcomed into this world. Right, because it can be a cold world for sure. So so with that being said, Orrin and Rob, your thoughts. Where does this mentality, me against the world, where does it arise from, do you think?
Well, for me, this is a personal mantra that I had growing up without a father for a considerable amount of years before I met my stepdad. It became something that I lived every day with the struggling in the community, with my peers, with struggling with my relationship with my mother at that time, really needing her to be the man and the woman, realizing my skin tone and what that could mean for me, and looking around at some of the things that were happening where I was living in my community. Listening to Tupac sing, it's just me against the world. It's just, It was just kind of something that was ingrained, you know, like, hey, it's time for you to realize where you are in this world. So, you know, it's definitely a mindset set, excuse me, and it definitely can move your behaviors towards certain things, both positive and negative, depending on what it is that you feel like you need to do. It's a survival mantra as well. Sometimes you have to fall back on it, especially in my younger days, noticing that all I had in this world was me at that particular point. So that's where I was at with it. Oh, well, how about you?
You know, I've seen it manifest in several different examples. The short answer to it is I believe that me against the world is actually a response. And what I mean by that is I'll give it through actions. A woman that's taking care of a special needs child that the family and friends and nobody understands, and you have to deal with everything when everybody else is asleep. The relationship that, you know, you have to endure where it's not one, it's one-sided or it's abusive, or the environment, the school environment where every time that child goes into the school and feels like they're being chastised and attacked. Me against the world to me is a response to how people react to the environment. It is a thinking that allows people to have a perception of coping that's generally not 100% true, but gives them the greatest control. If you adopt the mindset of me against the world, then you can take in your mind full responsibility for everything that you do and feel like what you do has all the bearing on outcomes, which I would argue is not 100% true. But where the mindset comes from is feeling like, you know, that's how you have to galvanize. That's how you have to circle the wagons. What do you think, Jay?
Yeah, I definitely, you know, think long and hard, because for me, it's rooted in conflict, right? It's mm-hmm. rooted in me versus everyone else, right? And what a world to be born into, right? What a world to be born into, that if I'm born into conflict, then how do I, as you were saying, you know, protect myself? How do I respond to this inhospitable society, this inhospitable world, right? But then also what you were saying, Rob, kind of like, how do I motivate myself? How do I galvanize and fortify myself so that I can take something that was intended for bad, which is being born into a world that's full of conflict and societal is structured for the destruction, mm-hmm. right? Of young Black children, right? How can I take that and turn it into something for my betterment, or something for my something that I can use to live and survive with, right? So so I look at it very much rooted in a trauma response. It's a response to being born into a world that is by all means outside of the threshold of one's family home. Hopefully a lot of families are able to provide that nurturance and that nourishment. All too many families don't have a safe, children aren't born into safe homes either, right? Mm-hmm. But to have that protective factor, right? So when I step outside my door, right, then there's going to be conflict there. So so if we look at it, because I don't see anything as all good or all bad, right? Mm-hmm. Rob, you had spoken that it's almost like this motivational mantra. Can you speak a little bit more to that? How has this me against the world mentality kind of helped you, or how has it helped your clients that you work with?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I kind of matured out of that, realizing that I did need people in my latter days. But I understand a lot of the youth that I work with, especially the young men that I work with, are similarly going through this as well. And so because I've gone through it myself, I use a lot of some of my past experiences when I'm talking with them, in understanding that some of the decisions that they're making is not only affecting them, even though they're coming from that stance of me against the world, right? And that their decisions affect their behaviors when it is about, you know, them, but they're not looking at their community, their parents, and how it would make them feel. And also looking down the line too, Jeremy, a lot of those decisions are right now decisions, right? As Orin mm-hmm. said, they're responses to something, right? Responses to being joked or, you know, responses to a young lady not receiving your advances, right? You know, denial in a lot of shapes and forms. Relationships with their teachers, as well as the court. You know, I mean, there's a lot of that. Well, it's just me here, you know, and my mom doesn't care. She's mad. She put me out, and you don't care because you're from the court. So just kind of showing them the good and the bad that can come from it. Mm-hmm. For some of the good, you know, all right, well, if it's you against the world, then you got to prepare yourself, right? So, you know, you got to definitely get out of school or get out of this next grade, you know, if you want to get a job so you can make money legitimately, mm-hmm. Then, yeah, I get that. So let's use it as a motivating tool, you know, not necessarily from a negative perspective all the time. It could be something positive as well. So use that to motivate you, right? Nobody needs to motivate you at this particular age. And I work with mostly like 15, 16, 17, 18 year olds, right? Your mother shouldn't have to be waking you up for work and school and things that are there. So let's start using some of those things too. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much my approach with it. All of my kids at first have that attitude when I meet them until we can establish some type of rapport. And then there's some trust there. Mm-hmm. That I'm able to kind of maneuver some of their behavior to something positive.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So on one hand, it really does allow for, you know, the person to maybe take some ownership and accountability, right? It's me against the world. So I need to be accountable, responsible, and I need to, as you were saying earlier, kind of almost like this internal locus of control. Like if it's going to be, it's up to me. So I got to make it happen. What are you thinking, Oh?
Well, I'm trying to figure out if I'm going to push back on the approach that this doesn't have greater consequences than benefits. Mm-hmm. Nobody chose my words carefully. I didn't say negative versus positive. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I will say that I can see could be productive is that me against the world is an emergency plan. It is short term. If you keep this mindset of inaccuracy, because technically there's no way that you physically could have gotten to the age that you got to alone. Mm. Right? But the reality of it is that if you're talking about short-term planning, like you're going into a job and, you know, or you are being mistreated at the job or any scenario, I can give you a million different scenarios, and you need a short-term emergency plan to get out. If you're lost in the woods and it's me against the world and that's the motivator, then, hey, that's good. But when it becomes maladaptive, is when you hold on to it and are unable to make the adjustment back to the reality of maximizing your resources and recognizing that you are enough. You are enough and you're entitled and you deserve to get the things that you desire out of this world. You just have to create space for it and allow the world to help you get to where you need. Align yourself with the universe.
Ooh, ooh, yes, yes. And so, Rob, when you were speaking, you had touched on, for me, a gatekeeping word, right? Which is when you develop trust with the clients that you're working with, right?
Yeah.
Right? And I wanted to start off really acknowledging that there are some positive elements to a me against the world mentality, because I've worked with a lot of, you know, young and even older brothers that come into or coerced into a counseling or a therapy session or just a conversation. And they have this me against the world mentality because maybe they're all that they've ever had. They couldn't trust caregivers and relatives and systems and friends, right? And so I don't want to further marginalize somebody that already has that trauma response of me against the world, right? Because they've already been marginalized. Embrace them, welcome them in. But it takes trust. They have to be able to trust and believe that there is something and someone else other than themselves in this world that can be of help to them, right?
And so, but let me ask you both this question. Where did the actual trusting process begin in that scenario that you gave?
So their parents, their mother, actually, you know, there has to be, I mean, were you not held enough? I mean, it, you know, you, the trusting thing, I think, begins in the womb. And then once you come out and then it's, you know, you build this me against the world personification when time after time after time, when there should be check marks on I can trust this particular person or persons to take care of me and get my basic needs done, it doesn't happen. And so I believe it starts there.
Jeremy brought up this excellent point about it's a response actually to trauma, right? But in the scenario, Jay, that you just gave, the client comes in and they have that me against the world mentality, and they were kind of coerced into doing that. I worked in the prison systems a couple of times, and I've seen and watched people who rather would get in the hole or get more restricted than to talk about their emotions, right? So even if it's involuntary, it's voluntary, right? And so in that scenario, where did you see your client as being beginning his trust process in there?
So what I act on faith and what I practice in my belief is that when I meet somebody, I trust and believe I am not the first well-intended, good-spirited person they have ever encountered in their life. And so therefore, I trust that seeds have already been planted, right? And part of my job in kind of walking and talking with them, so to speak, is to help kind of nourish, nurture, and water the seeds that are already there, right? Hey, I'm a social worker, right? I'm a sucker for a story, so to speak. But deeper than that, I trust and believe that there is goodness in all of us, right? We just haven't been exposed to healthy environments or healthy relationships that can bring the good out of us, right? And so to answer your question, I trust that it's already there. You know, a brother of mine had hit me with this, that in essence, therapy and counseling is a wisdom seeking wisdom and experience.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
When someone comes in, they're bringing the wisdom of their entire lifetime and the wisdom that has been poured into them by their elders, teachers, caregivers, by their life experiences. And so I try to meet them in respects to that. Right. So I think it's something that most everybody already has, although they just might not have anybody holding space for them or allowing for them to kind of just really express what's already there. Right. What are your thoughts, Rob?
I'm listening to both of you. I agree. I really wouldn't have much more to add to that, except this one thing. That when I try to exude some of those good things that was put into me, I was ridiculed. And thus it allowed me to go inward and never to want to display that again, because I didn't like how I felt when I did it in whatever sphere I was in, right? And so I shut myself off from that feeling. And so I'm not going to do that again. And so that's what I'm feeling that needs to be added for our listeners to understand that, you know, something happened or some things happened where several times or several instances within that gentleman's life, if we stay on that particular scenario, right, where they constantly said, see, there it is again. Okay, I'm never doing that again. Or I'm, you know, I'm never being nice again. Or I'm not, because this is what happens. So,
Once again, thank you all for tuning in and listening in. You are with us on the Unicorn's Couch. I am your host for this week, Jeremy
here with Brother Rob and Brother Oren. We are talking about this me against the world mentality. We welcome your input, your feedback, your comments. Email us at unicornscouch@gmail.com. And oh, you had spoken earlier, you had talked about when a coping response or when it becomes maladaptive, right? For the listeners out there that that may or may not be like me having some Sally Mae words in our vocabulary, right? I'm using words because I'm still paying Sally Mae for them,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely.
Can you explain to the listeners a little bit more? What do you mean by a maladaptive coping response or maladaptive response?
Absolutely. Let's take a scenario where a person is living in the traumatic environment of poverty, because that's trauma, right? That environment is conducive of a lot of things going on. Like, one, is the environment safe? That's an issue, right? Two, can you get well educated in that environment? That's an issue. Three, do you have the energy to be able to work a job consistently? That's an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Four, you know, what does this exemplify when you watch TV and see images of people doing it big all day, all night? That's an issue.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that I'm saying to you guys that I think is important is when you have a lifestyle where you adopt me against the world in the short term to get motivation to get out of that trauma, it is an awesome phenomenon. It helps you start the engine. But what happens is when you come out of that situation or when the situation gets better, you can only get better as if you believe that you can work the system to a benefit that serves your greater outcome.
Yeah.
And so you can't get out of that poverty unless you believe in your skill set that you can maneuver within the system.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have a good relationship with anybody if you believe it's me against the world until you try another relationship.
Mm.
You know, so there comes a point where if you are in another relationship or you're getting out of a situation or you're doing something different and you still hold on to that mentality against me against the world, you start to take for granted things. You start to lose out on opportunities because your lens is now, or the way you see the world is so narrow that you miss that person that's down for you 100 to help you get to the next level. You miss that opportunity or the way that you can get more money into your pocket because you're only thinking one way. You're not thinking outside the box. This person may have access to something that you may not notice. You're missing those because you're holding on to something that was only really designed to start the engine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's how I see it.
Yeah, I love that. Oh, I love that. You know, and it's it speaks to defense coping mechanisms that we employ when we're going through this, right? And so there's about 10 of them. I'm just going to rattle them off, and I mean, you guys, you know, our listeners can definitely look them up for more, a better, you know, an actual definition. But you know, you have denial, you know, you have repression, you have projection, displacement. We have regression, you know, rationalization, you know, sublimation, as well as reaction formation, compartmentalization, and intellectualization.
Yeah. So,
you know, I said all that to say that some of them can have a positive impact on you. But, you know, you and I want to say this one point, too. You said try, Oren, and you're absolutely right, but you have to fully try. I think a lot of times people don't, right? They say that they're trying, right? Mm-hmm. A new relationship, a new way to do something, but they don't give it their all, and then they're quick to cut it off, right? They're quick to going back to one of the mechanisms that I just mentioned to deal with the behaviors, right? And not really move through and tap into what it is that they need to do to get out of a particular situation or system, right? And so they hold on to that and they stay with that, and then that builds in their esteem, you know, and so they feel like they can only go to a place and then that's it. Or they can only do a certain thing with a woman or a woman with a man before, you know, well, she's too perfect or he's too perfect. So let me wait to see when they do something wrong, as opposed to really understanding and appreciating the fact that they're doing things right now. So yeah. I just wanted to throw that in there, Jay.
Yeah, if I may just highlight one of the defense mechanisms of the list that you had just shared, one is sublimation, mm-hmm. right? Sublimation. And I draw that specifically in context of this conversation because typically sublimation involves the defense mechanism of being able to take an uncomfortable impulse, let's say like anger or aggression, right? And I'd love to talk to somebody who doesn't think a me against the world mentality is not rooted in some sort of anger or aggression, right? But take an uncomfortable impulse that usually isn't socially acceptable, right? And then sublimate it into something that is more socially acceptable, right? This is America rooted in capitalism. It's rooted in economic exploitation. And one of the, I think, most often utilized forms of sublimation is I am going to work 24/7. I'm going to hustle. I'm going to grind. I'm going to make $1 million. I am going to make it in this society. And I'm going to, whether it's cutthroat, whether it's becoming a workaholic, because you can't argue with economic success in America, right? Mm-hmm. The problem is it further erodes and what I would argue is destroys a communal consciousness or a communal reality. When I adopt a me against the world mentality and then I sublimate it into a socially acceptable way of being very successful career-wise, at the risk of alienating myself from other relationships, like what you were saying, right? Alienating myself from myself.
Yeah.
From my family of origin, right? I become unable to be intimate, right? Because I don't think that I'm related to anything or anybody because it's me against the world, but guess what? I'm successful.
Wow. Did that man drop some knowledge? And let me just say for the record, Rob went to Sigmund Freud and dropped down his defense mechanisms. I'm going to have to say that this master's program is waiting for you, sir. go ahead and sign on. And Jay, you obviously made some good points. So I do want to add this, that we're talking about from a Western perspective and we're talking about from being in a culture of suppression. In oppression, right? We're talking about the American culture. But in a lot of Eastern philosophy, Eastern thought, it is, I am as we are, Ubuntu, right? And so it is a recognition on some level, other places that we absolutely cannot move if it's me against the world.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Because when I say communal consciousness, right, all indigenous cultures that I've ever listened to, learned from, sat down with, been exposed to, have had a very similar understanding of interdependence. I am because we are, right? Matakwiasan, we are all related. Right. And it's when we experience a break in that circle of life, mm-hmm. when we are dissociated or detached from other human beings, right, that it kind of reinforces this me against the world mentality. And American society, based on its economic reinforcement, based on the injustice and the oppression and the selective reinforcement that America can offer, right, that it reinforces, I think, a very unhealthy response, right, to a very unhealthy reality that so many folks are being born into, right, this me against the world mentality. What are you thinking, Rob?
Well, you know, I'm sitting here pondering, and as you were talking, Jeremy, and Orin, for that matter, I'm sitting here thinking about it from a personal perspective. I live in a community that has different diverse races. And we have seen firsthand how other races and ethnicities have adopted the behavior of we're all going to do this so we all can be accepted. And then I looked at my particular family and, you know, I definitely can agree with it is not healthy, period. At one point, my wife adopted this behavior and chose to do exactly what you said, to work her way out of the feelings, okay? Until she got physically sick, okay? And it was because of that that we were all able to surround her. But she had to realize that it is a communal thing in our particular household first, right? So that then we'll all be able to thrive. And so, you know, it touched me because it was like you were in my head, in my life, like you saw this happening. And one of the things that she used to get out of that mode, besides physically getting better, was to look at the people in our community around us and adopting some of the things that they were doing, right? Which was four generations in a household. But everybody's going to college. Everybody's buying property. Everybody is starting from a root, right? Mm-hmm. And noticing that in our African-American communities, we push that me against the world at a certain point. We'll often say, well, you're grown now. Mm-hmm. And that's not good, right? Because then that sends a person out thinking that I no longer have your assistance. It is no longer communal, right? And and in saying that, looking at it, it should always be that, right? Not depending upon, but you always have my help, even till I die. And the last part is, you know, divide and conquer. Mm. The system needs you to feel like it's me against the world. Mm-hmm. They need you not to rely on the OGs, as the young folks say, in the community to tell you that going to jail ain't a rite of passage, young man, mm-hmm. right? That, you know, becoming a Muslim in jail, while it's good, but, you know, you need to be on your deem out here, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, our system is set up in that way to eat us alive. Because we're not together. We're all social workers on this line. We know that, you know, the disappearance of the Black father in the family was the beginning, right? And so when mama had to now go to work and say that daddy didn't live there and daddy left, right? So now again, the young men and the young women growing up behind that have that same behaviors, following those same behaviors. We have to break the cycle. And we have to start talking about it. And I'm so glad that we brought this up because we have to get out of this mode of thinking. We have to.
Yeah. Guido.
I was just going to remind everybody that this is what happens in systemic oppression when public policy supports the separation. This is also a keynote when people are depressed and suicidality, the isolation. The need to, but not the need to, but the belief that what you're going through, nobody else in this world has gone through.
That's right.
And there's no other solutions for you. And so we have to remember that part of, you know, me against the world, again, I reiterate, is a starter for motivation.
Yeah.
And go ahead, Jay.
No, I was saying it's a survival reflex, right? It's and any time we're dealing with a trauma response, it's fight, flight, freeze, or even fawn. But maybe that's another conversation for another day, right? But yeah, it's short term at best, right? And so when I'm working with clients, I want to make sure that we pay good energy and good amount of attention to the roots and the remedies, right? The roots and the remedies. We want to be able to, as best we can, clarify and understand what are the roots of the issues, right? The positive, the negative ones, but then also what are some remedies, right? And so,
you know,
if I could, I think you raise a great point about, you know, just our concept of the unicorn's couch, really, is that we can spend all day identifying the problem and why the problem exists. But if we're not talking about and focused on the remedies, I just wanted to add that, then we're not really doing this process of service. So I'm glad you did mention that again.
Yeah. So one of the things that I remind myself often, and because it's such a parallel process and practice, but also, you know, working with clients is really being able to clarify and understand the difference between isolation and solitude.
Yeah.
Isolation and solitude. Right. And how I, you know, liken it is that the wisdom traditions, all of the faith-based, you know, stories and myths involve individuals experiencing solitude. Solitude is when I am alone by myself, but I am connecting either to a higher power or to a deeper purpose. Right. And so when I'm alone by myself in solitude, I'm gathering a lot of maybe wisdom, a lot of contemplation, a lot of reflection, so that when I return to the presence of others, I have a full cup to share. Mm-hmm. Right. And so even though I'm by myself, I am connected. Mm-hmm. Isolation is quite different, is that when I'm alone by myself and I'm disconnected, I'm cut off from myself, cut off from the world around me, cut off for some higher purpose or higher power. Right. And so I think that's one of the remedies that I encourage folks to really consider, that when you do find yourself on your own two feet, or when you find yourself alone physically, right, really tune into yourself. Is this a moment of isolation where I'm feeling disconnected and cut off? Or is this a moment that I can maybe transform or transmute, which is another defense mechanism, transmutation, right? Being able to transform or transmute that isolation into something that is more meaningful and something that's more fulfilling, such as solitude. Right. Rob, in your experience working with the youth, what are some remedies that you encourage and that you found to be helpful in kind of transforming this me against the world perception?
Thanks, Jay. So, you know, some of the remedies are ongoing, right? Because there's no one remedy that works for any individual kid, youth or families that I work with. Again, building that rapport and trust will help guide you in what you believe this person could use to get out of some of these maladaptive behaviors and some of these, it's just me dealing with everything. And some of those things definitely have to do with an old thing of having a family meeting. Sometimes the parents hearing from an outside party or cousins or, you know, just someone else saying, hey, you know, you could do this and be successful and you can support him by doing this. You know, nothing that's out of the way, but also something that I think a lot of times is taken advantage of because parents are working and they're not really paying attention to what's going on in the sense of how the child needs that attention and how the child needs to be alone. So definitely a meeting has to, you know, occur between the youth, myself, and the family. And then after that meeting, asking them to write down, you know, some of the things that they want to do, and then help them realize that they can't do it by themselves, right? Well, I want to graduate from high school. Okay, well, this is what you have to do. You're going to have to get with some teachers and, you know, so there's going to be some other people that you're going to have to use. Well, I want to get a job. Well, this is some of the things that you're going to have to do, you know, to lean on. And so I'm also building trust at this same time, mm-hmm. you know. So those are some of the things that I use. And then the most important part is coming back and checking things off. My OCD is kicking in now, right, y'all? But it helps me help them say, okay, you did this, right? You got your driver's license or your ID, or you got your, you know, completion. And once they start to see completion, yeah. then they start to realize that, okay, maybe this does work and I can open up and allowing people to do stuff. So those are mainly the three things that I kind of go in with. And like I said, there's different ways to reach kids, and there's not no cookie cutter way for each individual kid to be dealt with, right? And I'll just say this one last thing. You know, I have a young man who has just become a Muslim. And so I said, okay, you know, you finish your program and, you know, I bought a rug for you and I have a book for you, you know, and I showed him a book that I bought for him. And again, to see his face light up was what he needed. Mm-hmm. That's what he needed, you know, just to, and just to say, wow, you know, Mr. Rob, you didn't think that I was playing with this. You actually really believe. And so now I believe, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's one kind of step where, you know, I seen that that's what that particular kid needed at that point. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully that will allow him to finish the program so he can, you know, get the carrot at the end of the stick, sort of.
Powerful.
So again, that is just some of the things, you know, that you have to look back and say, what can I do for this particular person, kid, youth, family member, adult, or what have you, that will help push them further to understand that I'm here with them. So it doesn't mm-hmm. have to be a me. It can be a we against the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What are your thoughts, though?
Yeah, that validation, Rob, that you in that example is a powerful tool. That supportive action that you took. A couple things that I just want to talk about. Me against the world. If you continue the statement, I believe a lot of times it's me against the world. All I got is me because there's nobody else who can help me. Because mm-hmm. there's nobody else that wants to help me. Because mm-hmm. everybody has failed me. Because, mm-hmm. you know, they don't understand. Well, the first thing I say is you got to fight the script. You got to fight the script. I say this all the time in therapy. Feelings are always valid, but not always true. And so mm-hmm. you have to learn how to continue to push back against it, because the reality of fighting the script is that that mindset, like I said earlier, limits you in a lot of ways. And I might touch on it again. The second one is something that my therapist taught me. And I tell all my students, all the upcoming clinicians, to get your own therapist, especially if you're going to help people, especially if you're trying to be well in your own life. And my therapist used mm-hmm. to say, build your team. Like he used to say, I created the Super Friends. And that means that if you don't have the right people around you now, and I say this in therapy, I said it this morning to a new client, I was like, listen, when you're trying on that path of healing, not everybody's going to be able to go along for the ride. You're going to learn some new things about people. Some people that support you are going to go along for the ride. So you got to rebuild your team. And people who you think are supposed to be on your team may not qualify for that team. People who you ignored because their role wasn't exactly the way you thought it should be are a very, very valuable part of your team. The third point is become more aware and be present. You know, when scripts are running and you're sitting around and you say nobody understands, mm-hmm. are you really saying that nobody understands or nobody's taking away your pain? Because what oftentimes, you know, people are looking for pain relief and they place these expectations on things and people around them in situations and behaviors that alleviate them from pain. Sometimes what you're doing doesn't work the first time because it was never designed to work the first time. It was designed to be consistent and change over time. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the answer of time and stability are very integral to the answer. So you have to fight the scripts at a lot of place and allow yourself for the growth potential. And so with that, Jay, what about you?
Yeah, man, I just want to let those thoughts breathe just for a moment, right? Just let them breathe. So our listeners, thank you for joining us for the ride, walking with us, tuning in. We welcome your input and feedback. unicornscouts@gmail.com. Support us and we will do our best to continue supporting you all with some good content. right? Thank you, brothers, for the both of you, right? For just continuing to lift your voice up and to share, you know, some powerful insight, some powerful truth, right? I encourage folks to experience community. Experience community, be it in a religious service or a gathering, and it's hard to do under this COVID, quarantine state that we've been living under for months now, right? But experience community. In order to do that, as you were saying, Orin, you've got to be able to kind of check that script, right? Me against the world. At some point, you're going to have to let that go. In order to show up, be present, and allow yourself to experience an alternative way of being, which is being in community, right? Know your tribe, pick your friends, pick your team, as Orin said, right? Because until you actually experience a healthy attachment, one of those moments like Rob just explained, that could have been that young man's first time in a very long time where someone said, I believe in you. Enough to invest in you, to invest in your spiritual transformation, to invest in, I was hearing you, I was listening to you, right? And so we have to be able to be present ourselves in order to be present for a healthy attachment, a healthy bond, a healthy relationship. So that's what I encourage folks, right? It's also a reminder that there's got to be some place where we belong. There's got to be some place where we belong. And it's got to be, if not in our own body, in our own heart, in our own mind, in our own thoughts and spirit, right? In the presence of someone else. We're social beings. We're born into families. We develop tribes and communities and nations, right? And so, therefore, we can't be human beings without having some social connection and relatedness. So, man, good stuff. Good stuff. I'm reminded of a quote by Krishnamurti, who says, "It is no measure of health to be well adjusted to a profoundly sick society."
Absolutely.
Right? I like that. Yeah. It is no measure of health to be well adjusted within a profoundly sick society, right?
Something just hit me like a ton of bricks. You know, some of the stuff that we do are just habits, right? This me against the world, as Orin said, is a starter. Some people just want to keep starting. Right. They get into a habit of wanting to keep start over. And, you know, our habits, you know, rule our behavior. Right. And it's important for our listeners to know that, you know, these habits can change. Right. They can be replaced by new routines. Right. And that change happens in moments of a choice. Right. Absolutely. And so, you know, think of it this way. Habits are formed by one, a cue. Right. And that is your environmental event that triggers a behavior, right? So it's me against the world, and it triggers that starting behavior over again. And then that becomes your routine, right? Every time it's always going to that, right? It's an action that you take as a result of the cue, right? So you start again. But the positive thing is that what is the reward? If the reward is not getting you what you wanted, then that's not a habit that you need to keep. Right. And it can change. And we know that sometimes habits can be subconscious, right? Or unconsciously, we have this habit. So we have to realize, you know, that these habits that we have, they can change. Listeners, they can change. Look at the reward. If you're not getting any further with this mantra of me against the world, then let's change this habit. Let's get a new routine. I'm sorry, Jay. I just wanted to say that part, man.
Man, no need to apologize for speaking the truth. Absolutely. Right. Right. And another thing, as you were speaking, that returned to me is, we've got to really cultivate self-love in a healthy way. But more than that, I would propose is we have to find something that we love more than ourselves. Mm-hmm.
right? So there's this balance of loving ourselves, but having someone or something that we love more than ourselves, right? And as we wind down, I did want to just spend a few moments, not to, to be superficial with it, but I thought that there was a powerful embodiment of this particular conversation in the Black Panther movie, where you have this character of Killmonger and this character of King T'Challa. Right. And I think that Killmonger may embody and is scripted to really kind of present with this me against the world mentality.
Mm-hmm.
Right. To his own destruction and to the destruction of the very circle that he was not part of. Right. That he was not welcomed into. Mm-hmm. Right. And so any thoughts on that point in the few moments that we have before we wrap up?
Go ahead, Rob. You want to jump in?
Well, you know, he was actually my favorite character of that particular movie. And again, because he represented, I think, Killmonger, I'm sorry, because he represented the angst of, I think, a lot of young men that I work with now, right? Of a total misunderstanding and driven by that misunderstanding. Also, you know, I don't prescribe to the villain of movies, because they need you to have a good and a bad guy, a white and a black, and it just goes back to the systematic oppression, right? And I love the fact that King T'Challa was able to see that at some point he was wronged, right? And so that informed his development, and it put him on a path, obviously, of destruction and destruction of the circle that he wanted to be a part of so much. But at the same time, there was pain that was there, right? And so that pain has to be addressed. And if we don't have a proper outlet to address it, you know, you take that pain coupled with him being a genius, and then you'll get destruction, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that I love the fact that King T'Challa or Black Panther knew at this particular point that he was not to blame for his behavior, which I think a lot of our ancestors are looking at us and saying, right? But what do we do? How do we stop that cycle? You know, how do we get in there and change their minds before they do end up killing themselves or self-destructing? Oh.
Yeah, the movie Black Panther was symbolic. That's why it was so loved and adored. Black Panther is a construct. You know, there are many Black Panthers, but then the one that they talked about in the movie that they focused on. But one of the things that made it so beautiful was not their technology, not their advancement in society, but it was their collective unity. It was the system that allowed them to be great. It was the reliance on each other, which allowed them to grow. So translating that to us and the people that we work with and people we share life with, it is the system that you create of health and love that allows you to grow. It is not just what you do on your own. I've been a director of an agency that served over 500 people. I've been a director multiple times, a supervisor and things like that. And I was never as productive as the team that I work with. And so when you think about your own issue, don't run from fear. Don't run from fear. You don't have to embrace it and live in it. But when you run from fear, you delay the inevitable. When you run from fear, you take on the world and your mind by yourself. And when you try to take on the world by yourself and you try and avoid fear at the same time, you oftentimes find yourself in similar situations like Groundhog Day, repetitious over and over and over again, until you make the commitment to not do this alone. So, you know, those are some of the things why I encourage people to get help. Even if you don't have any family, to get help, because you will be enlightened with other perspective. You see what I'm saying, Jay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Beautiful, beautiful. If you want to go fast, go by yourself. If you want to go far, go together.
Absolutely.
Right? Right? And on that note, couldn't do this without the two of y'all brothers, right? Wouldn't want to do it without the two of y'all brothers, even if I could, right? I know it just would not have nearly the same meaning, purpose, impact, or echo. So thank you both once again. Right. Any closing remarks as we wind down and wrap up episode 6 for this year?
Yes, sir. First of all, let me say this to Jeremy. Well, job well done. Thank you again for hosting this episode. We look forward to posting it. You brought a lot to the table throughout season right. 1, but it's not over. It's oh. not over. Like oh. we wanted to do 6 episodes, but nah, we got to add one more. We're going to add one more that's totally focused on the feedback, the questions, the thoughts that people have brought to us and said, I got something to say. And so we're going to spend a whole episode just addressing what you think and what you said. And we love the feedback. We love the verbal feedback for people that know us and for people who don't that sent it through feedback on iTunes or that sent us some feedback through our Gmail account, which is unicornscouch@gmail.com. Like, yeah, we love it. And so as we get ready to think about season 2, I want y'all to keep in mind that we're going to have a website up. We're gonna be on possibly Facebook or some other social. Well, maybe not Facebook, but Instagram. Maybe not Instagram. Well, we'll see. You'll see. So we're gonna jump in and we're gonna try and do this because it wasn't just for you guys. It was for us. COVID-19 was serious for all of us. It caused us to feel a lot of different ways. The structural oppression reminder was a lot for all of us. We're all trying to raise children during this time. We're all trying to share our lives during this time. And this was therapeutic and clinical for us. So we thank you for allowing us to have this opportunity for us to grow. And, you know, I didn't want to take up that time, but Rob, did you want to add to that?
Yeah, I got a few things. First thing I want to say is all through all of these episodes, we talked about having your own therapist. And I've been blessed to have my two therapists on this podcast with me for free. So, hello. I want our listeners to know that if you think you can do it better, by all means, send us some topics. We will research them. We'll talk about them. Because again, this podcast, although it is therapeutic for us, we would like for it to be therapeutic for you. And we know that there are some things that you want to talk about. We just really touched on a few things, but there's a few of these items that we can have a full season about. We want to hear from you. We've been asking you. I'm praying that you send us something that you want to discuss or have a very different point than we do. We want that. Okay. Thank you so much. Again, special shout out to my wife for allowing me to do a podcast and my children. Much blessings to both of you and your families. And last but not least, I have to give a shout out to my mother, who has pushed me into this field when she saw in me years ago.
Thanks, Mom.
That I could be a blessing to someone. You know, Jeremy, you say this a lot through all of our episodes, how much of a blessing it is for us to do this work and help people, right? And so it is her. Set me in the back of those classes at Loyola and have the stuff subconsciously put in my head. So I appreciate and I love you, Mom and Dad. I appreciate you so much.
Yes. Jeez. Yes, yes. Once again, that'll wrap it up. On that note, can't think of a better way to end out other than giving thanks to Mom. So we're going to wrap it up on that note and look forward to reconnecting next week. So peace to one and all, and y'all be good to yourselves and each other.
One more thing. Shout out.
Oh, yeah.
If you looked at our artwork, we had a wonderful brother that Brian Tolbert, briantolbert.com. He does this, among other things. He changed our artwork. If you like that unicorn and you see our names, that'll be our emblem moving forward for the time being. But thank you. Peace out. And we'll see you again real soon. Episode 7.
Right.
Right now. Peace.